Welcome to the Mom's Day Bunker with Carrie Henson. In the bunker, you will find joy, grief, laughter, and remembrance. It is a safe place for moms to gather during the storms of motherhood, to share stories and to encourage each other as we navigate doomsday moments that change the trajectory of our path as women. Our stories contain difficult subjects that may be triggering for some listeners. These are real stories from real moms that are surviving, have survived, and are thriving after the unthinkable happened. Please take care of your mama heart as we cozy up together, take shelter from the world, and begin.
So Alexander is 9 and a half, and Addie just turned 4. Actually, right before we found out I was pregnant, I was told we couldn't have kids. So me finding out I was pregnant was a huge shock. Not going to lie, I was actually kind of upset and mad because I had spent time like wanting it. And then I had to like, okay, this isn't going to happen. Like, let's redirect, you know? So I was like, all right, cool. So then when I found out I was pregnant, I was like, oh, okay. You know, so then I had to like reprocess all that. We did all the normal pregnancy stuff. Everything was fine. He had a very normal birth, very quick. My OB still to this day will laugh at me because I came in at 9 centimeters and was like, what's up? No big deal. And she's like, you've got to stop. You got to slow down. Like, you're going too quick. So we did all that and he was fine. He was like the perfect little cute little baby burrito. I love when they wrap them up in the little swaddle with the little hat and their big chunky cheeks. Like my favorite thing. And he was perfectly fine. Right about 18 months, I started realizing, okay, he's not like, you know, progressing like the rest of the class. He didn't start walking until he was like 15 months. No big deal. Like it wasn't anything I was concerned with. He was my first. And quite frankly, we had 3 big dogs. Kind of just thought he was doing what the dogs do. Well, then we started realizing, like, not talking as much as the other kids. Like, about all he said was, like, dada, outside, truck. But again, he was the only kid. There was no other kids in our family his age. So I kind of just chunked it up to it, you know? First time mom, don't know any better. So then we started year 2 of daycare. By that point, he was turning 2 because we did Mother's Day out. So he did 1 year in the 1-year-old class. The second year is when we really started to notice the difference. We started noticing he had sensory issues to start with, mainly biting. He needed that oral sensation. It was, not going to lie, it was really, really hard to walk into a school where everybody's picking up and somebody is signing a paper that states your child got bit today. And then you're walking up right behind and they're like, hey, can you wait 1 second? Cause I need you to sign this piece of paper. I think in the first probably 12 weeks that year, he bit 22 times.
Was he provoked to bite or he just needed to like, what do you think was going on in his little body, his little mind?
I will say a good bit of the time, the teachers always told me he was provoked, but he still wasn't talking. So he didn't know how to get it out. He didn't know how to leave me alone or get away from me or ask for help. So we bought the chewy beads. I'll never forget, like we sat down and I watched Blaze and the Monster Machines with him. And every time Blaze would get mad, I'd look at him and be like, see, Bubba, when Blaze gets mad, he should bite these beads. And I'd bite the beads real hard and show him a mad face. And I mean, honestly, it picked up. But his school was so good. They were so good. He's like the first one they've had that had autism. At that moment, we didn't know it was autism. We knew there was something going on and they were more than willing to work with us. They were very nice. I even had the director, I still laugh about this, one of the kids that would bully him because he was the youngest. It was him and one of my friend's little girls. They were a month apart and they were the youngest. The closest kids to them was 6 months older. And I mean, you think about it, two to two and a half. That's a huge age difference, even for just normal. But one of the ones that was, you know, not doing right by him, his dad went to the director and was like, you need to kick this child out. This is absurd. And she, I'll never forget it. She looked that man dead in the face and said, if I kick him out, your child's going with him. Like they had our back. And I will, there's never a bad thing I could say about that school. They learned how to handle him and how to work with him right alongside of me. They walked right there with me. And in that moment, looking back, I can say they were part of my community. But in that moment, when you're trying to, oh crap, what is my child doing? Like, yes, I spent many days on the way home crying because I was like, I don't know how to fix this. And nobody in the family, nobody else knew, because they're like, our kids didn't do that. Like, they weren't judgy about it, but they're just like, I don't know how to help you. So it was really hard. The turning point was when I would make an appointment with the pediatrician, because our pediatrician was a family friend. He went to dinner parties with Alexander's nanny, like family. I would make an appointment with him for like first thing in the morning, because I was like, I'm going to go in and I'll talk about this. There's got to be something I can do. There's got to be something going on. And I had started looking up, you know, Google's the worst thing in the world. But I like started Googling, like, what could be wrong with my child? How can I help this? You know, and that's when I learned about sensory processing. And I met a girl here that her little boy, bless her little soul, he's got all sorts of stuff with him. But she was like just starting to learn about sensory processing and all that. And she was very vocal about it. So I started Googling and I told my husband, I said, I think he might have this. So I'd make an appointment with the pediatrician to go in. I'd call that morning and I'd cancel it. I'm like, no, he's the youngest. He doesn't have any brothers. He doesn't have any sister. It was always, I'm doing something. I need to change something. So I finally, one day, he had like 103, 104 fever all weekend. So I called and said, hey, I don't want to cancel my appointment, but I need to change it from a consultation to a sick visit. And they were like, come at the same time. He was planning on being here for you. He can just see you then. And he walked in the room and he's like, hey, you want to tell me what's going on? And I'm like, oh, he's had a cough. He's got a fever, runny nose. He like stood there, calm as could be. Let me talk. And he looked at me. He said, that's not what I want to hear about. I was like, what? He's like, your two-year-old is pulling out a metal exam table from behind the wall to get away from me. That's what I want to talk about. I don't want to talk about that. And he's like, but that's what we're going to talk about first. And he sat me down and we went through it and he put in a referral to therapy and that was it. Like, they saw him, they started helping, you know, and it was like a weight lifted, because I was like, it's not me. I'm not the crazy one. It's not that there's not something wrong, you know, but it made me feel better that like you could breathe a little. I think it's because you see all these things and you want motherhood to be this blissful, perfect thing. And it's like a storybook, a fairy tale, and nothing should go wrong. And it should just be hunky dory. Like, everything's beautiful all the time. And you don't really think about the what ifs, or you don't want to think about the what ifs. And it's hard to accept once you start, or it was for me, it was hard to say, okay, maybe there is something. Maybe, or even when I did, it was like, if I speak it into existence, then it's there and there's no going back. So he's a level one, but after looking back at all of his like therapy notes and just like talking to teachers and us filling out the umpteen thousand pieces of paper you have for the doctor to go over and read, and your history, all that stuff. They told me on numerous occasions, the only reason they feel he is as good as he is because we did early intervention.
Wow.
Did not wait. They said if they would have gotten him all those years ago, like in 2017, he probably would have been on the verge of like a level three, level two, which is you're reaching that nonverbal stage. You're reaching that you have to have direct support. And it made me feel good because I knew I did what was right. But then you look back and you're kind of like, God, it really was hard.
I know very little about autism. And when you say level one, level two, level three, what does that mean?
So that's the degrees of now. They've changed it. I feel like every so many years, they change the way they grade autism. So like level one is high functioning. Like you can be in a normal class setting. You can walk around. Like you would not know. So like Alexander, I had a ref at a basketball game the other day. Alexander got a little handsy. It's basketball, but he got like extra handsy. My husband came down from the stands because consequently I'm coaching and he's like, you need to take him out. And I'm like, he's fine. Leave him be. We've got to learn to work through it. We've got to teach him this. And after about the fourth foul, we called a timeout so the other coach could talk to him. Cause you know, kids, moms you don't know what you're talking about. So the other coach pulled him to the side and was talking to him. And the ref walked up to me and he's like, I didn't know. You didn't know what? He's like, well, I didn't know. I don't understand what you're telling me. What don't you know? He's like, I didn't know he had autism. I said, can you not tell? Like, do you not see the aggression out here? He's like, oh, I just thought he was really aggressive. I just thought that was his personality. And I was like, nope, I'm not training my kid to be a street fighter on the basketball court. Like, he's just
saying, get in there, get the ball. Those are
noodles. Like, so serious. Like, one of these kids got the ball from him, and he got so mad about it that, and I mean, Alexander's, he's a big kid. He's like 4'8", 4'9", and he's not. This other little kid that was the point guard that he was guarding, I mean, max 4'2", 4'3", like, pint size compared to him. About as big around as a pencil. And he got in almost a three-point stance at the half court to line up with him. And I'm like, uh-uh. Like, standing on the sideline, waving my hands, doing the stop it, like, anything you can think of. And I was like, oh, my God. We're going to get kicked out right here. Right here, because this is when it's presented. Like, of all the days to show everybody your autism. Let's do it today. Like, you look at him any other day and you don't, unless you know him, you don't know he has autism. Unless you watched him grow. And like when we moved back, it was because Dustin got laid off. We went from making almost $200,000 a year to barely making 40 or 50. So we couldn't afford therapy. Like we had a house, we had a baby, we had groceries. It was still COVID. So we signed up for football. I called all the therapists we had in Houston. And I'm like, I know y'all said gymnastics. I know y'all said like jujitsu, taekwondo, stuff like that, just to get him moving, crossing the midline. I was like, what about flag football? And they were like, try it. Like you get your social, because most kids with level one, they're socially awkward because they don't know how to read cues. Like they don't know how to see a mad face, a happy face, or they don't know like people looking at you be like, back up off me. You know, they don't understand that aspect of it. So we tried it and oh my gosh. There was days I had him like a football under one arm and the baby like a football in the other arm and keys in my mouth walking to the truck. Cause I was like, and I was mortified because I'm like, oh my God, you have all these people looking at you that they don't know what you're going through, but you get the judgy looks because they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
How hard it is just for your child to be out here.
What do you do, Danielle, when you get those looks?
Then I was thoroughly embarrassed. Like, cry for hours. Like, oh, I'll never forget the first day he blacked out on the football field. We drove 45 minutes before he like calmed down. He was half naked because he was stripping clothes off. And he, the sweetest little voice from the back seat, "Mama, where are we going?" I was like, "I need you not to talk to me right now. I need you not to talk to Mama. Mama needs to breathe." And he's like, "But why are we going home?" And I'm like, "Let's listen to some music because I'm going to not talk to you right now." And it was in that moment that I realized, I was like, this is what his autism looks like. Because everybody else, just because he has level one, he could meet somebody that has level one and they're completely different. And I thought to myself at that moment, his autism is, I don't want to saying it's easier than some, I feel like it, I don't want to say it degrades it, but I feel like it doesn't give it justice. But there's people with like level two and level three, like there's some kids with autism that never learn how to use the bathroom, you know? And it's like, I'm over here stressing because he can't play a team sport at this point in his life. It's not that big of an issue, but it goes back to, it doesn't fit my perfect little motherhood fairy tale. Like, when I found out I was having a boy, I was so, so excited. I was like, all the sports, football, basketball, baseball, like, I can't wait to do it all. And then when we found out, I was like, oh, like, will he ever? And I still struggle with this today. Like, God, I still struggle with it. So, like, the church we go to, they have, like, it's called A Night to Shine. And it's for special need families that, like, some, maybe their kids aren't comfortable going to like dances, or maybe they're not comfortable in big, but it's to celebrate them. And I saw pictures and I was like, oh my gosh, that is like, they get all dressed up in like suits and tuxedos and dresses. They all have a partner. That way they can go enjoy the night. I mean, all different ages. And I'm like, oh, Alexander would probably love that. And then I'm like, oh my God, if I sign my kid up, they're going to look at me like I'm crazy. Like, he doesn't look like he fits the bill. So it's just, you have so many different levels of autism and they're so hard to navigate and fit the puzzle. And there's no real puzzle pieces that connect, because you can't, just because one, like Alexander has aggression. And God, we've worked for years with this. And it, some days it's great, some days it's not. We just started a new medicine regimen trying to hope that helps. But then you get somebody else who has autism and they may have a monotone, but and they don't know how to read anything. They're just like, straight face, this can be no expression.
Do you think there are like, you know, getting those looks of judgment at the football game or sports things? Are there levels of judgment within the autism community, or do the parents like truly understand, like, this is all just so complex and everyone is just doing the best they can with the cards they've been dealt? Like, what does that look like?
I would love to say there's no judgment, but then we would have to have like a perfect world. There's always, I feel like there's some form of judgment. I mean, so Facebook can be a great thing. Facebook can be a horrible thing. I said that earlier today about something else. There are so like autism movements, autism speaks, autism, and they all have different views on what should be done, how it should be handled. And you would think even inside of those groups, if you join a group, you think you would join a group that's like-minded people and they all don't judge this, don't judge that. But I've learned, like, I have actually removed myself from several groups because you can see inside of that, that people judge based on what you do and how you do it. And they're like, you shouldn't do it this way. Like ABA, for instance, is one of the most controversial things I have ever heard.
What is ABA?
So ABA is a type of therapy. and it is described all sorts of different ways. We personally did not do ABA, not because I don't agree with it, but because when we lived in Houston, and everything goes back to Houston because that's where we lived when we were doing therapy, the therapists we worked with, they did the same types of things. I mean, ABA is basically teaching your kid, this sounds horrible, teaching your kid how to be more neurotypical, how to keep themselves safe, how to button buttons, how to get dressed, like trying to, I don't want to say train, that sounds horrible, but how to equip them to be more neurotypical. But there's people that don't agree with that because we shouldn't keep, we shouldn't take these kids that are different and make them something they're not, which in a sense I get as well. But when it comes to their safety, when it comes to being able to be a, like Alexander, for instance, I'm hoping and praying that one day this sweet child can get a job and leave my house. But if I don't help him learn those things, I'm presetting him for failure.
Does he know he's different? Like, what have you told him? What are the conversations you've had with him?
So I'll never forget. And I cried, God, I cried. His therapist cried. That was one of the first times I've seen her cry for him. We were on the way to therapy. We were almost there, man. I don't know why he asked then. He looked at me in the rearview mirror and said, Mommy, why am I different? And I sat there for a second. I was like, what do you mean? And he's like, well, why am I different? Why do I have to go to therapy, but my friends don't? And I just sat there for a second. I said, you know what, buddy? We're all different. We're all made different. And sometimes some of us just need a little more help. And it was like a realization that even as innocent as they are that young, they notice things. So it was really hard then to kind of answer that question. But then he never asked again, never said anything else about it. Once he got a little older, we started, you know, this is hard for you because of this. But we never fully like went in depth with it. Like he's heard us talk about it. Matter of fact, he's in therapy again now, not like occupational speech. He does talk therapy. I call it talk therapy. I'm sure there's an actual word for it.
CBT therapy, probably. Cognitive behavioral therapy.
He just goes and sits with a therapist in his psychiatrist's office. And she like works with him. And that was one of the first things on our first meeting with him was, have you told him he has autism? And I'm like, yes. And no, like, I mean, he knows because he also consequently, I think it was second grade, one of his teachers, we have this really cool app called a Dojo app, I think, or something, or I don't know. What is it called? Because it's a really cool app. Class Dojo. You can message the teachers back and forth. They can message you. You can see how their day is going, stuff like that. They sent me a message. And there's days I wish I would have screenshot this because I can't go back and find it. Alexander is refusing to do XYZ. His exact words are, I mean, you know, I can't do that. My autism stops me from doing that. And I said, I'm going to need you to tell him. His mama said to do the assignment and I will handle him when he gets home. And I was like,
I think he might be a little bit smarter than we give him credit for. He's a smart kid.
So he got home and I was like, Bubba, why you said that? He said, I mean, I really just didn't want to do it. But you know, sometimes it's really hard. I said, that's fine. That's okay. I see that. But that's not an excuse. Your autism is not an excuse for anything. I said, I want you to understand that before anything. I said, if you can learn how to interact with people, if you can learn how to play a sport, you can do your schoolwork. Like, we're not having that issue. He never gave me any issue about it again, but I mean, to read those words in text, I have autism. I can't do that. I'm like, why? Like, why would you even say that? And he didn't at the time. I mean, he didn't know per se what it was, but he knows it gives him issues. So now I went on this, Amazon is so great. I went on this Amazon binge and bought like all sorts of books and things for me to read and then give to him and say, here you go. You can either read this with me or you can read it without me, but you need to read it. And it breaks autism down, and it breaks it down by different levels. It breaks it down by Sally Mae Jones does this, but Betty Mae Sue does it this way. And I think it was an eye opener for me to read, because it was like, wow, okay, so some kids struggle with this, some kids struggle with that. And like, I gave it to him a couple weeks ago. He's on chapter 9, has no problem, reads it at school, pulls it out of his book sack, reads it at school. Like, ain't no shame in his game. He beats his own drum. He goes at his own pace. I will never forget in Mother's Day out, that first school he was in, one of the teachers, I'd get so frustrated because he'd ride a bike there. Refused to ride a bike at home. Act like he didn't know how to ride it. She told me one day, you've got to let go. Mm-hmm. He's going to do it at his pace. He's not moving at your pace. Slow your pace down and move to him. And I was like, oh, I don't want to do that. I don't. Like, I want him to come to me. Like, meet me where I am. Why do I need to meet you where you are? That to me, it was like one of those gut-wrenching punches that you're like, oh my God, but all the other kids are doing this. Like, why can't you just? And I'm like, oh, you've got to stop comparing your child to everyone else.
And I mean, these moments, when I say they change the trajectory of our life, people who have not gone through these mom say moments do not get it. They don't get that, because it changes everything. Like, you have to think about 20 years from now. Mm-hmm. You have to think about 30 years from now. I'm sure you've had to think about when you pass and he's still alive. Like, you have to think about these things that go on forever, and people don't. I think that the people who are holding your boat, who are your boat, they sit in the pain with you and they love you and they support you, but they're never truly going to get it because they haven't had to go through it. You know what I mean? And I think that's why it's so important to build this Mom's Day Bunker community. Because there's a mom listening that's going through it. And maybe it's not autism. Maybe it's not childhood cancer. Maybe, you know, maybe it's something else. But there, I guarantee you, and I say this, I've taken a lot of, I've recorded a lot of moms, but I've also like had a lot of phone calls and emails and whatever. And I always end with, it's time we take our motherhood back. Mm-hmm. And it means different things to different people. But I think it's time we take our motherhood back, in a sense that we reclaim a different motherhood than what we thought we were going to have. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. And that's okay, because you're the perfect mom for your child. Mm-hmm. You're the perfect mom for your child. I am the perfect mom for my children.
Oh gosh. I struggle with why me? Like, I know for a fact there's a God. I know there's a reason, and it's by his grace that people get healed. People get taken. He's not, just because he can heal everybody doesn't mean he will. But like I told her, I have to work through my own why me issues, because I know out of the why me, there's a testimony. And without that testimony, we can't help other people get through their why me.
Those are wise words. What's going on with your baby girl?
We have been, since she was 8 weeks old, she has been sick. Sick, always. We found out she had like reflux in both her kidneys. She had hydronymphosis. We did 2.5 years of everyday antibiotics for that. Go and get ultrasounds and video x-rays, which I didn't even know was a thing, but was pretty cool until you realized you got to get your baby calf in order to get that video x-ray. And then you're like, oh, that's not really that fun anymore. So we went through all that. And then she stayed sick. And we're on ENT number 3, not because I didn't like the others, but because she just needed that next level of care. Now we have a pulmonologist. We have an immunologist and an allergist. We have had 2 sinus reconstructions, one involving rhinoplasty, all to find out this past Monday, a week ago today, that my her having CF last year is true.
That her having what? You cut out.
CF.
CF. Cystic fibrosis?
Oh, so I am in a big, why me phase right now.
Oh, Danielle.
Yeah. So that's why I say the why me is, I get that so much, but I also know something will come out of it. It made me giggle though, because when I found out I was pregnant for her, I told my husband. I even told my OB back here, because we were in Houston, so I couldn't have my most favorite OB, like my person, you know. And when you have an OB you love, like, that's your people, man. They got to be. They all up in your junk. You got to be close with them. I prayed and prayed. Oh, God, I prayed. And I say this all the time. I prayed for the wrong thing, because they – when we went to Vibrant, they taught us you be very specific in your prayer requests. Thank God always for the things you want. You thank him for what you have, but you thank him for the things you know are to come. You claim it. And I prayed and prayed for a neurotypical baby. It was always my first prayer. Dear Lord, please give us a neurotypical baby, a healthy baby, but a neurotypical sleeping child. Because God, I was in the depths of no sleep then. Like, we got 4 hours of sleep a night. So I knew I wanted those two things first and foremost for the child that was inside me. So I giggle all the time. I'm like, it's me. I prayed for the wrong thing first. I should have prayed for a healthy baby first and dealt with maybe a not neurotypical baby. So that's how I get through it right now. I'm like, just pray for the wrong thing. It'd be all right. She'll be fine. You know? But it was like a huge moment. And we haven't told our families yet, because she had this procedure Monday. They found all the polyps this time. We have genetic testing still to do. But I had already had an appointment with the CF clinic before this procedure. For April. So I, because it was there, I knew it. Like, not that I've done research, but from going to school with somebody that had it, from Alexander spending those moments and loving on that family and knowing what that family went through and just going, this seems kind of off. Like, I think right now I'm just kind of going through, I told my boss this earlier, I don't think I can stress about it anymore. I don't think I have any more tears to cry at the moment. She's like, you probably don't. She's like, you're going through it day by day because you have another kid you have to worry about. She's like, but at some point you need to take the time to face it. I told my husband that I won't do to her what I did to him. Like, I don't want to mourn what I don't know, because there's so many advancements now. So I'm like, one day at a time. I don't want to live in fear. I don't also kind of think I don't want to make it real. So that's kind of, you know, hard right now. I just want her to be around the people that love her, people that love us, and just to keep it like it is.